Hello, everybody. Welcome to Interview with the Horror Virgin. I'm your host, James Brooks, and with me tonight I have...
Hi, I'm Kirsten.
Hi, I'm Leandrin.
I have two guests tonight. Again, I know, right? You know, I had a last episode with two people, Dalen and Em, so now I've got, you know, Leandrin and I've got Christina. Kirsten, sorry. I forgot the other person couldn't
That's
make it.
That's okay. I've been called worse.
That's okay. Well, you and another guest named Christina were supposed to show up, but unfortunately she had some stuff to do, so Leandra stepped in and wanted to join in on the fun. Now, before I start leading into what horror film they're going to be doing, like I always do, my Joe Bob Briggs, I like to call, you know, like meander or whatever. I just keep going off on a tangent or something. Let's start off with some questions about like your horror knowledge. Where are you at with horror right now, and where'd you get started?
Let's see. Well, I'm old, so I like classic horror. Like, I used to sit up at night and spend the night with my grandparents, and my grandma would fall asleep, and I could have the TV, and I would watch, like, the old classic horrors, like the Dracula, you know, Lon Chaney, and Vincent Price movies.
The classic Universal golden age of horror films.
Yes. Absolutely. My number one favorite is Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte. Love that one.
Okay,
love
I consider that a bit of a thriller, but it has some horror moments.
Scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. I think I was like 10 when I saw it. It was awesome.
Cool. What about you?
I was raised around people who were obsessed with horror. I'm talking decking the house out every year for Halloween, so horror movies were always on in my house. So I kind of grew up with the macabre and liking scary stuff. I'm working on some older slasher, like some of the original slasher films right now, working my way through those. Out of all of them I've seen so far, definitely Hellraiser's got to be my favorite franchise.
Yeah. Have you seen a good couple of the series after the first film?
Yes, I've seen all of them except for Judgment and Revelations.
Yeah, that's the one where they didn't have...
They didn't have Doug Bradley. That was why
anymore.
I backed out on those.
Yeah. They never... just fun little trivia fact. I know I've said this on previous podcast episodes, but a fun thing about Hellraiser, when they were doing the party at the end of the first one, no one knew who he was because he was out of makeup. So everyone was like, who is this guy? And he's like, I was Pinhead. I was the main Cenobite.
Well, he does look very different.
Oh, yeah.
I rewatched 3 last night, and I'm comparing the 2 side by side. You can see it, but by themselves, it is very hard to see at some point. Yeah. Sometimes, goodness.
No, it's fine. I totally get what you're saying. I mean, like, we got a lot on the mind. The horror does stuff to the mind. It makes you just think so many other things. But
right.
No, when you say, I know you were talking about your classics and everything. Yeah. What were the ones that you were talking about that you were rewatching? You're talking about, like, you know, the 70s going into the 80s when, like, the slasher started to become the main genre?
Yeah, I'm working on slasher era. So, first Scream movie. I'm working on some Texas Chainsaw movies.
Okay.
Friday the 13th. All of that good stuff.
Oh, good, good. Yeah. Michael Myers, Halloween.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so you've at least seen, like, you know, the big one that really changed it all. Have you seen Alien?
Halloween.
I have not seen... That is on my list. Top of my list right now.
It is a slasher film.
Going to be watching it.
It is a slasher film. 1978. Yes. Maybe I'll bring you on for that one. That's a good one.
That would be so good.
I might have to do that. You know what? We're gonna do that. Bring you on for Alien because I got a lot to talk about that one.
Awesome.
And the future of the series and why Ridley Scott has this God complex with the Alien series that I will never understand. Well, cool. Now, you both are, you know, fans of the horror and everything. What's stuff in horror that really, really you like to see in horror films?
That's a good question.
What I like to see, I like when there's a lot of suspense and a little bit of mystery thrown in there too. The predictable slasher horror films, kind of, you know, I like the art and the whole, you know, genre, but like they get too predictable sometimes,
mm-hmm.
and those they kind of lose me a little earlier than they should. But if it can get the more fantastical, the more suspenseful, the more mystery. Then that's what I would like in horror films. That's what I do like in horror films. But and then there's the classics. I mean, you can't help the slasher ones, even if sometimes the plots aren't that great. Oh my God, I said that. But like you know, like Halloween. People are gonna yell at me for that one. But like Halloween and Friday the 13th movies. And there's only so much you can do with the plot. The rest of it is just like the entertainment of it all, which is cool. Very cool. But I like a little bit of plot, dude. I like a little bit of plot.
I get it. I'm more interested in the visual. I love the art. That's why I loved Hellraiser and fell in love with a lot of Clive Barker's works, is the creatures that he creates and the visual aesthetic of these beings. That I love visual stuff. I'll freak out. I'll go like, oh my gosh. Everyone's like, shut up. We're watching the movie. And I love visual stuff. I also I like seeing camera work and that goes for any films, I guess. Camera work, because I want to get into film. Mm-hmm. So seeing what people do with the camera to make it a scarier, almost like you're there. It's very immersive. So
you're like a, I'm going to get a little film scholar here. You're like the mise-en-scene when it comes to films.
Depending on what that means. I've never heard that term.
It's pretty much like the meat and potatoes of films.
Okay.
That's what mise-en-scene is.
So yeah, probably.
It's a term that you, when you get to, like, if you ever take like a film class in college or like anything, or even like an online course, they will mention mise-en-scene a lot. Like, that'll be the thing that you'll hear most, or probably in your first like week of like film studies, is mise-en-scene.
Yeah, recently.
Now you know what it is.
True. Yeah, with a lot of found footage movies I've been getting into recently, too, I love the feeling of, like, I found the tape. I'm watching this. And I feel like that's a very immersive experience.
Interesting.
I did those. So for all my criticism of some of the newer horror, or look, I'm old, guys, okay? I was a teenager in the 80s, so I have my fair share and probably overdose of 80s slasher horror films. But, like, I was surprised that I liked, like, the Blair Witch. I was fascinated by the whole idea of how they filmed that. You know what I mean? It was raw. It was not anything big, but that found footage, you know, found lost footage kind of thing. I think that kind of stuff is pretty fascinating.
What about you?
And I'm seeing more and more of that on the internet. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Oh, this found. Do I believe it all? Oh, hell no.
Oh, no, no, no.
A lot of it, you can tell it's staged.
It gets very
convincing,
but
I like the way
though.
It does. Yeah, it does. Yeah. It seems like it connects with your emotions and your fear. Like, you can relate to the characters and the story.
I definitely
better.
Put myself in that situation a lot more in found footage movies than I do other horror movies.
Yeah, you find yourself sitting there going, I wouldn't do that. I would have da-da-da-da-da.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, the Blair Witch Project, even though we haven't gotten the film that we're going to be watching yet, was not the first found footage film. There was another film before it. Well, actually, there was two films before it, but I kind of consider the film before it the real found footage film, like, you know, Granddaddy. It's called The Last Broadcast. And, like, the gist of it is there's a group of people who, like, do this mockumentary of going to go and to try to find the Jersey Devil. But only one person comes back and everybody else is dead and they're suspecting him of murder. And at the end of it, there's a big twist.
Ah, gotcha. That would be. I haven't seen that.
I haven't heard of that.
It's on Shudder as well. It's a very forgotten one because it's told in a documentary style and not like. But where Blair Witch kind of excelled with that, there wasn't documentary. It was just people with a camera.
Yeah.
But the film that is considered to be like the one that brought found footage to where it was a very exploit. I won't call it. It's an exploitation film at this point. It's called Cannibal Holocaust.
I was about to bring that one up.
Yes.
I have not seen that either.
I have.
That's a hard one to get through. If you like animals, I'm gonna tell you right now.
Ooh. Yeah, I probably.
Yeah.
This.
Then,
well, they got in trouble actually with this country. I think it was Italy.
I want to say it was Italy. Somewhere over there.
It was somewhere over there that they got in trouble with it, but yeah.
Well, I read that the guy who made the movies, he had the actors sign a contract that they wouldn't appear in anything else for a year.
Yeah.
To give off that effect that they had actually died, and he had to bring props to people to show, hey, these people were not harmed when I made this film.
Mm-hmm.
It was, reading on it was really intense.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I meant like, it's not torture porn level, like Green Inferno. It's...
Oh.
It has its moments because at one point you're just kind of like, wow, this is terrible. Then you see the next part, you're just like, wow, this just got a whole lot worse.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't do well with that.
It took a hard left turn when you're like, when animals get involved and it's not like a fake thing, these were real animals.
No, I didn't know that until after
that.
That
would be a no.
A soft shell turtle. They pretty much, I'll not go into detail on what they did. But
thank you, Jay.
You're welcome. But they filmed it and it's just kind of like, geez.
Yeah, I had no idea about the animals until reading on the film and I,
Yeah, that was my big thing with it, but cool. Yeah, so I see that you guys seem to like, you know, the whole thing about found footage and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But now the film you're going to be watching is called The Medium. Shudder's original film called The Medium, and it is actually told in a documentary style found footage.
Nice.
Perfect.
Now this is a Thai horror film, and some of the information on this is a little hard to find, but I did my best to do some research on it, so at the end I'll share some stuff. But it's Thai horror, and it's about... You know, the title, a medium who's telling her story about how she became a medium, but there's unexplained events happening within her family.
Gotcha.
And with me, I have, a medium and a medium in training, I guess you would call it. So give me some of that experience right now. Like, what does it mean to be a medium?
Well, no two mediums are the same. The way that they receive information may be similar, but it's a sensory thing. So we're using all of our senses that people are aware of, but then we're also using and accessing the senses that most other people have but aren't aware of. Something is triggered in your system. Most mediums think and agree, either a traumatic event in your childhood or an extreme illness or a literal close to death experience. It can also run in bloodlines and in families, and that's like that in my family. I can remember seeing spirits or sensing things that other people didn't as early as 4, 5, 6 years old, somewhere around there. The way that I work is I literally use my intuition and all of those senses, plus the information is just kind of what I call dropped into my brain. Something that wouldn't make sense, or even a phrasing or a word or a name that I wouldn't know or didn't say or wouldn't be thinking of, it would be completely out of left field. If it just pops into my head, don't question it, just blurt it out. Sometimes it makes sense, sometimes it doesn't, sometimes a couple of weeks later, what I've said or what I'm feeling or sensing or experiencing that I tell people, it makes sense further down the road.
Okay, and would the same go for you, Leandra? And like you said, not all mediums are the same, or empaths.
Right, yeah. I always, when I was growing up, would have a lot of experiences with spirits and spirits communicating with me or being able to feel something in the room that not necessarily everybody could. And, you know, going more into that and learning what I did feel and what I was hearing and seeing, it's been a really interesting journey learning about this, and it's cool that I'm finally stepping into it and figuring out what I can do. And I started reading tarot around 12 years old, too. Took an interest in the cards and kind of worked my way through there, because it's the same. It's not the same experience for every medium. So the way that you interpret cards, the way that the cards answer your questions, it's all different based on the person. But mm-hmm. It's really interesting.
So for instance, I could do a tarot spread of 3 cards and Leanne pull one, the exact same 3 cards, but your reading might be different with her than it is with me, even the information, because we read the literal translation on the cards, but the rest of it is kind of sensing within the person themselves and mm-hmm. their energy and how, and or their situation and how it relates to the card, what the card is trying to message or tell us. It's a lot of it is subliminal, and a lot of it is being able to use that intuition, that extra energy. Some use tarot cards, some use crystals. I myself prefer a pendulum, and then I have a particular crystal that's important to me, and then I draw on my ancestral energy. So my spirit guides, and then my dad. And it's almost like I'm having a conversation with him and asking him the questions, and he's giving me the information.
So it's a family thing. Like when you become, or like when you feel that you have a connection as a medium, mm-hmm. everybody from that, like you were saying, like with your dad or your ancestors, mm-hmm. you can kind of feel them supporting you in a way.
Yes.
Energy-wise.
Yes.
Energy-wise. Okay. Energy-wise.
Yeah. I'm trying to word it as best as I can, because I'm ignorant with this kind of stuff, and that's why I want
good.
To, you know, because the film that they're watching delves deeply into that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, everything that you're describing to me, I watch what this, she calls herself a shaman.
Yes.
In her culture, they're called shamans.
Yes.
And the fun fact is, it's a woman, and it's not a man, and I think, like, people get the misconception that when you hear shaman, at the very end of it, it has man, but mm-hmm. in this, I feel like it changes that to show that, you know, it's both sexes
it
can
is.
Be
right.
part
it is.
Of this.
It is, absolutely, and even women who practice shamanic medicine are considered shamans.
Interesting. Well, yes. Look at that. Well, cool. Well, I'm kind of glad you guys have answered some of my questions and given me some
sure.
definitions about yourself as mediums. Are you guys ready to tap into the medium horror film?
Absolutely.
All right.
I'm curious.
We're going to watch it, guys.
I'm curious about this.
Oh, I can't wait for you guys
I'm
to
ready.
See it. Yeah, all right. Well, we're going to check out the medium. We'll be right back, guys. All right, guys. It's been a while, but we're back, and I really want to hear their reaction right now. I think they've got a lot on their mind, so I'm going to let them take over.
Where do we start?
I don't know. It was very cool. I liked that it was done documentary style. Mm-hmm. They did really good with it, moving the cameras around and the different family members. I mean, they gave equal time to everything. It was pretty cool.
I liked it. I'm still trying to process a lot of it. It was really, really good at showing you that how quickly the fear and the concern spread throughout everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It was good at showing that element of panic and everyone, nobody really knew what was going on.
Yeah.
It did really good at setting the scene overall.
Mm-hmm.
I am too.
Showed how close everybody was, the problems that some people had with each other, and how that became an issue later on with trying to help. Wow.
How it came into yeah.
Just very speechless.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I'm genuinely very speechless on that. It was really, really good.
It was very good, actually.
Oh, cool.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty neat.
So, with the whole thing, like, what were some things that you liked about the medium?
I like that it was done documentary style, yes. And it tells you a little bit about the culture and the beliefs around their spiritual religions and mm-hmm. how they see things. That kind of makes the movie easier to understand, because then you're looking at it through their perspective instead of what your belief systems are. I like that they did it that way. That was very cool.
I think the casting was great.
Oh, yeah.
Especially whoever played Mink did an incredible job at showing
possession. She was great.
Possession.
Right? Yeah. Actually, all of the casting was done real well.
Really
because
good
none of it looked like it was acting. You know what I mean? It looked like it was...
There were definitely sometimes I would fix my posture and I was waiting for something to pop up. I don't prepare myself for jump scares like that much. That was really, really
it
good.
Was. It was. The whole, man, the whole dog and the...
Yeah, the
yeah,
dog.
Yeah, the dog and the baby.
The dog and the baby.
It was a ruthless movie. Nobody survived.
No, I went into this, you know, documentary style. You think there's only so much they can really pull off. I didn't expect as much as we saw.
Mm-hmm.
It was very ruthless, it was... It added to it, to the fear factor.
I don't know, man. After she took my baby the first time, I probably would have been out of there. I'm just saying.
You would think. The parents have been like, or at least the father would have been like, I'll stay behind, you take the baby, and get out of the town.
And they got no, like, in-laws or somewhere they could stay.
Right, or with neighbors or something. Because it seemed like a small town or area they were in.
Right.
Speaking of which, I liked how we were talking about this earlier throughout the film, the isolation that it makes you feel.
Yeah. There's, like, no big army to come rush in, or the FBI.
I could go anywhere. I didn't feel like there was anywhere they could go if things got too far out of control. Mm-hmm. I think
exactly.
That made it
scarier. Like at the end when they all started becoming affected by the evil elemental spirits and the energies and stuff. They're running around. It's like, where are you going to go, dude? Like, where the fuck are you really going to go?
Because one of two
things. Like in a mountain village, buddy. I'm just saying.
If they don't get you, then whatever's probably in the woods.
Out in the jungle will.
Exactly.
Right.
Because you don't know what could be out there. Yeah, but that's what I like about the medium is good. It
sets that sense of isolation, what makes you more vulnerable, that makes you feel a little more constricted into, like, okay, what your options are.
Definitely.
Cool.
Very cool.
I also did like how, I picked this up probably on my second watch, if you, like, watch with some of the editing, it quickly went a lot from the Buddhist statues to the Christianity a lot more.
Yeah.
It made you
probably think a bit, too, about, like, what the film's trying to juxtaposition or whatever.
Right. Well, that's, like, my comment. I'm like, why didn't her mom, like, freaking take her to the church? I mean, you know, okay, so the aunt and the, you know, ancestral spirituality isn't a no-go, so then... Like, the next best option, you know?
Maybe.
I was just like, yeah, right?
I think the panning from the different religious
maybe
places.
I think that was, like, showing her mother's conflict with religion back and forth, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's kind of what I got on that.
I think as we went through the movie, there were a lot of things that symbolized lack of control.
Mm.
One thing that I've been thinking about since we saw the scene was whatever the fly, the dragonfly, where half of its wings were in the puddle
and
it couldn't
just
get up and move. It felt like that was a big symbol.
For me, I felt like that was kind of like how she was feeling.
Yeah.
With all of this. Like, she was aware,
mm-hmm.
but I think some of it she wasn't aware.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Awesome. I'm glad you guys enjoyed it, thoroughly enjoyed it and everything.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, like, there's one thing I have to gripe about. I feel like the pacing is just a tad bit slow for it, but I understand why, because they want to show the gradual thing, because I feel like with possession films, they have to do the whole, they have to do the Exorcist thing.
Right.
It has to happen a lot faster than what people are used to.
Yeah.
Whereas I think this wants to show it gradually happening throughout an entire year as you like kept up
right.
with it.
Or, yeah.
Or a couple
well, that's
months.
Pretty cool there, because though at the way that, you know, the big conclusion and the big
mm-hmm.
ending was, you know, that huge ceremony and all that. I mean, you had to have all of that other info leading up
yeah.
to that to build that anticipation.
Also, some of it was less pacing and more the fact that they were trying to figure out what was going on. They kept coming to conclusions that weren't correct. They were preparing to do other things, and
mm-hmm.
it led into something different where they thought maybe this could be the problem until they got to the actual source.
Yeah.
It was a lot of, is it this? Is it connected with this person, these people? I think
yeah.
that was part
is
of the pacing
the suicide,
as well.
Is it suicide?
Right.
Is it
a lot of mystery
ancestry,
behind
the, like the family and everything.
Yeah.
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 I thought that was pretty cool how they added in like a backstory to explain where these energies and entities came
yeah.
from and why it kind of follows their family.
Kind of like a rippling effect from one person
right,
like
right.
tossing
those...
in a big stone in the water.
Yeah.
And everything in its way is going to get hit by those ripples.
Yeah, 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 yeah. We call that like ancestral difficulties in the mediumship field. It's like people like to change like the ancestral curses and bind those or cut those off or change it. But yeah, that's, yeah, it's a real thing.
Yeah, and that's
like,
what I was about to ask you guys
ancestral curses.
Next. Like, how much did you think, like, this was a really good depiction of being a medium / spiritual?
I thought it was a pretty good depiction. Absolutely. As far as, like, her aunt goes and her gifts and abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
She explained very well what it means to really feel it. It's not a matter of seeing it with your own eyes.
It's
something that you feel, something
it.
That's with you.
Right, right, right.
Even though at the end she kind of like feels like she made a confession that she's never felt the possession at all when
yeah,
she became
she
a shaman.
She, yeah,
right.
she did. But I think that was more, honestly, I don't think that was more about, to me at least, I didn't see it as like, okay, definitive that she wasn't.
She was
know,
a fraud
actually
or
connected or a fraud or wasn't really connected to those energies. I think it was more doubting herself because this
yeah.
was such a huge undertaking.
That's what I got too.
Especially once we realized that her sister was also going to be involved in the whole reclaiming ceremony. And you know
yeah.
what I mean? That was kind of right. stuff that was kept silent till that very moment. But Nim knew that all along because it was part of the planned ceremony. So I think maybe she was starting to hold that whole thing with her and her sister and her accepting and her sister running from it. So
mm-hmm.
she ended up with it. I think it's kind of that whole circle was put into doubt in her mind
yeah.
there at the end.
I do feel the ceremony would have gone a lot differently if Nim had, you know, survived.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. as we saw in her whole house, that everything was like, you know, desecrated.
Mm-hmm.
But the mystery is you probably think that she did it when you have like that ending like that last interview where
right.
she's just completely distraught. But at the same time with Mink, where even though she might have been locked away, there was no talismans on her door prior to the whole ceremony.
Yeah.
So there's no telling.
She was still able to get out. I mean, they padlocked the door and she still fucking boiled and ate the dog.
Exactly.
So,
and kidnapped
I mean,
the baby
you know,
too.
Right. Yeah, right, right.
Yeah.
So, you know, hey, she was able to, I mean, it's supernatural
mm-hmm.
and then preternatural energy, so it's gonna find a way out, it's gonna find a way in.
How do you think how did you like the whole or like the depiction of the possessions being very feral versus like what we've seen in like American possessions where it's very
I kind of liked that simply because the entities that he explained, like that all of those entities along with all the ancestral curse added on top
right.
of it. It, the, these were like he was saying this, you know, the insects, the snakes, the animals,
centipedes,
the rabbits, the centipedes, all of those souls were part of what this entity
okay.
was.
And, like he said,
and I think it gave it that, it helped explain that whole feral,
yeah.
like an animal versus a demon.
At the end, there was no telling how many things had gotten to her because,
mm-hmm.
like you said, it's like a key in a car. Anyone can get in it and drive off with it. So
yeah.
there's no telling what could have been in her at that point or how many things were coming and going. through the nights where she was up and walking.
Yeah, because there was that scene where all of a sudden she just kind of like just rushes at her mother and then just rushes out because the ceremony wasn't done right, or it wasn't, they didn't understand what they were doing, and then unfortunately
when they opened that door and opened that barrier, it broke the connection that they had at the ceremony.
Yeah.
So that's why it failed.
Yeah, okay.
If they had kept that door closed and her behind that door with those talismans, that wouldn't have happened. I think the ceremony might have been successful.
Yeah, it would have. But speaking of some of the ceremonial stuff, what were some of the creepy parts of this film that you guys did like?
That I did like?
That you did like, that you thought really were like, ooh.
I like the whole ceremony thing. I thought that was pretty cool.
The ceremony was good. I liked...
It was very cool.
I feel like the descent of watching Mink go from completely normal into... what takes over her was very scary, and watching it gradually get worse and less in control of her and the people around her was very, very scary.
Yeah.
Cool.
I was definitely on edge towards the second half of the film. As we got further on, I was like gripping my chair and preparing because I had no idea what was going to run at the camera or what we were going to turn around to see.
For me, the scene that always still gets me every time I watch this has to be when the other aunt goes in there, and then all of a sudden the baby's still in the crib, because it clearly establishes it that the baby is there, but she can't see it, which means Mink is doing something, or Mink, those I say in energies. Quotation mark, is doing something to her specifically, so she can't see the baby.
Yeah.
And then when she goes in and doesn't realize the baby's still there, you just see Mink turn around and just open up her mouth, and the baby sounds.
She gave her that little look like, gotcha!
Exactly. And it's like what you said before, when you hear like children or something coming from an area that they don't normally come from, you don't normally go that way. You kind of turn and go the other way.
Yeah, do the opposite of go that way. Yeah.
That's like one of the like big warning flags. If I can't sense childlike energy and everything like other evidence is saying it's a child, I'm suspicious.
Like how she was at the very, when her friend was saying she was acting very childlike, but again, when we're watching it, we're not really sensing anything childlike. There's something that's just very malicious.
Yeah, right away, something malicious and negative.
And even pushing the children away and making one of them cry.
Yep.
And then even making her other
having
aunt,
fun at it. Yeah.
Right.
It likes to, it wants to scare.
It's
and,
enjoying the fear and the torture.
Exactly. Yeah. And children are easy to do that, especially when she got that poor little girl to cry.
I know.
You feel
disturbing.
So bad.
Yeah. That was pretty disturbing. The dog.
I thought something was going to happen when she was kind of chasing the dog, cornering it. I was like, what's going to happen here? And something did happen. But it wasn't what I expected.
Yeah, but I will give the medium credit for it. Nobody gets out alive.
No, right? I didn't expect that. I honestly expected an ending where
at least
because
you know they'll run down the hill and eat all the other villagers. Just saying.
Oh, I mean, yeah, they are.
Imagine that mob of just people running on all fours. And that's,
it is. Now, when you saw the scene with, like, the Bayan's statue's head was, like, decapitated, like, I felt like you two were, like, wanting to be like, ooh, that's not...
Yeah,
it's very disturbing.
Like, oh, that's bad. That's just...
That's like Amityville horror with, like, the cross going upside down kind of desecration.
Yeah.
Because at that point, you know something's powerful enough to toy with that, and it's just trying to get a rise out of you at this point. It thinks it's fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
Or it has no fear. It has no fear.
No fear of that, or trying to get them to think, knowing that the ceremony was coming up, that it had no fear of said deity or its powers or energies. But I think that was a bluff, too. I think that's exactly why it did that.
Cool.
Well, and I also think the decapitation of the statue really messed with Nim and how she felt about her abilities. I feel like that could have been a plan all along because was very powerful in the situation.
Yeah.
I feel if she was there for the ceremony, things would have gone a lot differently.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like seeing the statue that she prayed to decapitated really messed with her.
Yeah. Gave her and then just threw in more of those doubts. Because there's no question that she did have a connection and she did have gifts and abilities. I mean, we saw it in the video, too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, cool. So what are your final thoughts about the medium? Like, you know, what is it something that you would kind of rewatch, recommend to a family member?
I'd rewatch it, folks. I think it's pretty cool.
I'm going to drag my best friend over and make her watch it. I'm not going to tell her what we're watching.
It's on Shudder, though. You're going to have to
It's on Shudder?
It's on Shudder. So if your family wants to subscribe to Shudder, or if you just want a week a free trial, go for it. I mean, I am in no way
some good stuff on there.
Able to
promote. I saw, some stuff looked good.
They do. They have a lot of good stuff on there. They have their own originals. They have The Joe Bob Briggs Show, I can never stop mentioning that show for the rest of my life because I absolutely love The Last Drive-In with Joe Bob Briggs. And if you ever want to see something with like a talk show host who talks about horror films and has a co-host, her name is Darcy the Mail Girl. She followed me on Twitter. That's amazing.
Awesome. All right. Yay.
Her name is Diana Prince. I don't know if that's just like her thing.
Yeah, I get it. She may not. She's too young.
Yeah. So. Well, the thing is, she will... cool thing with... I'm going off on here just promoting the show, but like after they watch a show, Darcy will cosplay something from...
That's so
I
cool.
Love that.
The movie, yeah.
That's right. I love that. Fun. Now you're giving Leanne ideas.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, don't give me those ideas.
I'm just saying.
They make podcasts.
When they did Babadook, yeah. She came out dressed up as the Babadook.
That's so cool. I love it.
Yeah, but she will. She'll come out dressed as other stuff. But here, I want to watch something fun. You know, nice. Last Driving with Joe Bob Briggs.
Awesome.
Nice.
Keep that in mind.
Cool. Well, I'm so glad you guys came on the show finally that stuff. And if you ever want to come back, I've got plenty of horror films.
Oh,
and I've got so much to talk about. I know you and I, Kirsten, have a special podcast to do.
We do.
For those of you that are fans of the Sleepaway Camp series. I won't get into too much right now, but let's just say Kirsten has her connections.
Yes.
Ooh.
All right, guys. I'll catch you next time. See ya.